Delish snack cream. That's so good they'll make you scream. I'm in love with the queen of cannoli. She's got ricotta and a cherry. She's the girl I'm gonna marry. I'm in love with the queen of cannoli.
Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin on the Civic Media Network. If you miss any part of today's show, you can always listen to the podcast, which you can find at asgoeswisconsin.com or on Spotify and Apple and Stitcher or wherever you find podcasts. And you can always join the conversation at 844-967-2789. So on Wednesday, the Supreme Court heard oral arguments to test the so-called independent state legislature theory in the case Harper v. Moore. And I wanted to wait to talk about this until we had someone who actually understood more fully than Jane and I do, because we are not lawyers. So here to break down and talk through what this case is about and what happened on Wednesday during the hearings is Jim Santel. Welcome to the show.
Kristen, I'm so delighted to be with you. It has been a while since we've had a chance to chat, and I'm just delighted to be with you this morning to chat about this and other things as they come up.
So let me just give your credentials for why Jim is actually credentialed as far as being able to talk about this. He spent 30 years as a criminal prosecutor and civil litigator with the United States Department of Justice, including 6.5 of those as chief federal law enforcement officer for the Eastern District of Wisconsin. And he's also, as you heard, Jane's music choice.
Right.
He is also the host of Morning Cannolis
Network. Right.
Saturday mornings, 9 to 11.
Right. And we sit around, we talk about civics and other things related to government and law and rule of law in America. So great opportunity, as is this morning, to talk with you about the same topics.
Absolutely. All right. So we'll talk. We'll plug the show more at the end because you're here the whole half hour. So let's just dive into it as far as what is the background of this case?
Sure. So let's begin with the concept itself, which is the interstate. The legislative theory here itself. ISLT, the independent state legislature. It comes from the Constitution of the United States of America. That is that when James Madison and George Mason and other people put all this together, they said that the times, the place, the conditions, the circumstances of voting will be established by the legislatures, by the state legislatures. If you think about it, that makes sense. When you go to vote these days, it's not that the federal government comes in to run our elections even recently. It's all your state people, right? It's your local clerks, all those kinds of people doing it. And that's the way we've done it for, yes, indeed, 240 years or so. And again, not without some disruption along the way. And the point has always been this, Kristen, as you have articulated this so well. If you've got concerns about those rules and regulations, if you're concerned about the timing, for example, drop boxes or early voting or other things like that, that we in Wisconsin have seen, where do you go to challenge those rules and regulations that are put together by the state legislature? The answer is the courts, right? You run into the courts and you say, judges, there's something going on here. I think it disenfranchises people. It prevents them from voting in a way they otherwise should. And the courts will look at that and say, okay, we'll take a look at the Voting Rights Act. We'll take a look at the Constitution. We'll take a look at your basic right to vote and determine whether or not that's right or wrong. Now, it is not that. It's the legislative theory itself. The independent state legislative theory says this, that because the Constitution speaks about legislatures, therefore it doesn't talk about courts, and that the founding fathers must have meant, therefore, that only the legislature, not even governors and certainly not courts, have responsibility or authority in this area to decide these matters. It is, to call it fringe, to call it obscure, to call it out there, is probably being kind. I've talked about it as being sort of those folks who believe that JFK is still alive, or the moon is hollow. It's that kind of a thing in the legal arena. It has come up from time to time. It's been mentioned from time to time, but always discarded, including by the Supreme Court. And so out of North Carolina, this has now percolated up, and we can talk more about the basis for that. Yeah.
So this is coming from North Carolina, which is arguably as gerrymandered
Absolutely.
As Wisconsin,
Absolutely.
You know, however you want to measure that.
Right.
But this was largely because of their redistricting maps, right?
Precisely, right. So what happens is the North Carolina legislature draws lines just like every other state did. And as a result of that, the North Carolina Supreme Court looks at this and says, you have drawn these lines in a way that disenfranchises people of color. Same thing goes on in Alabama, other places, also cases before the Supreme Court. And so the North Carolina Supreme Court says, go back, legislature, and do better. Do this again. Go back and correct your errors here. And the legislature says, no. on two grounds. One is we didn't inappropriately gerrymander. We have enfranchised everyone, and your allegation, your core allegation is wrong, which, again, courts have decided. People take those positions. But secondarily, and this is why it gets to the Supreme Court, and this is why this matter is so important to talk about, what the legislature then says is under this independent state legislature theory that once again says that courts have no role in this, you, North Carolina Supreme Court, shouldn't be deciding this at all. You've got no jurisdiction. You've got no power. And only we are the ones who make these decisions, not only about the times, places, the circumstances of voting, but about the substance of what we've done. And so the courts are out of business, if you will, when it comes, once again, to federal elections, at least to this point, when it comes to identifying and electing senators and representatives. And again, that sets on its head well over two centuries of law. We've always done it that way. And the concern, as you and I were chatting before, is just that, number one, that the Supreme Court is even looking at this fringe, obscure, out there theory at all. But apparently that we do have, as we determined a little bit on Wednesday and certainly before that, we've got at least four justices who say, yes, this makes some sense. And that should be a source of great concern for all of us. I know it's for you and Jane as well.
And so I think this is kind of the origin of, we just covered what the origin of the case is. Right. But prior to Wednesday,
right,
what was the fee? Because I know you've talked about this a lot in
right,
your show.
Right.
What were the potential, and still are the potential
right,
outcomes of how the Supreme Court could hear this case and what they could rule? And when people, there's headlines saying this will destroy democracy. Mm-hmm. What does that kind of dystopian
sure,
ruling
and
it, look
right,
like?
Right, and it could be dystopian, as you can well imagine, a theory like this, which is fringe, and it is pretty much out there. You've got different variations on it, and people articulate it in different ways. At its most extreme, it does have the opportunity, does have the chance of bringing to an end all that we've thought about in terms of voting, which is the core of our republic, right? And so one of the consequences, depending again upon how broadly you apply it, is this. We talked about this already when it comes to disagreements about the processes. And here we've had issues about ID, voter ID, right, a few years back, and even more recently about ballot boxes and about early voting, the timing, all that. That, if it goes back to the legislature, the courts are not involved. The very people who make the rules are the ones who are going to re-decide the rules. Probably no real due process at all on that. So that's hugely problematic in terms of process. Let's talk about the ones that are even beyond that. Let us suppose, for example, that when it comes to federal elections, again, a senator, a representative in one of the districts in Wisconsin says, I was the winner when, in fact, I wasn't the winner, just by the pure calculation. Normally, what would happen is, what would you do? What did Donald Trump do 60 different times in the past year or so? He went into court, right?
Yeah.
And yes, 60 courts said, no, Mr. Trump, the numbers don't support your notion. This doctrine would say that you would not have the capacity to, you would not go into court to challenge that. You would not have a dispute, if we will, between the winner and the loser, according to math. Instead, it goes to the legislature, and they would vote on who won. And what does that mean, even as you're shaking your head, as everyone does, furrowing the brow, those kinds of things, Kristen? What that means is, in perpetuity, if someone is in power, a party is in power, here in Wisconsin, it's the Republicans, other states, it's the Democrats, equally concerned out there, what you could do in perpetuity is continue to simply override the voting results, override the results of the elected population out there, and say, you know what, we think, yeah, maybe there was some fraud, and maybe, in fact, Jim did win, and Kristen, who has the numbers, maybe there was some fraud, and really, really Jim won, not Kristen, and as a result of that, we're going to put Jim in the role, in the Senate position, and not Kristen, and basically erasing your vote.
And that would be legal.
And that would be legal under this theory, according to the Constitution, as interpreted by the United States Supreme Court. And what it means, of course, is you think about that. Why would I vote then, right? The inhibiting, the deterring factor. Why would I serve as a poll worker to go through that entire exercise if I know that those folks in the legislature, whatever state it is, are going to look at this anyway and say, you know what? Not so much.
We don't like the winner.
We don't like the winner. We're going to choose somebody else. And why would I go to vote in the end? And that's the real destruction that you're talking about, Kristen, when it comes to the demise of democracy. There's another aspect of it, even with respect to the Electoral College, too, of course. We know that, again, Electoral College votes are assigned based upon the popular vote in the state. And so that, again, determined if there's a contest by courts. Here, if you've got a legislature that decides, maybe candidate X won, but we think there was fraud, so candidate Y probably won, and we just choose to award the electoral votes in our state to candidate Y, you can do that. And basically, then you change as a result of this, the results of the presidential election through the Electoral College based upon the decisions of those legislators about who won. It is stunning. It is just absolutely cataclysmic. And in the end, it changes not only how we elect people, but frankly, who we elect. And that's the concern about this scary, horrific theory out there, the independent state legislature theory, ISLT.
So to bring it back and not scare everyone, that was a prediction of what could happen.
Right.
Now on the hearings, I was happening on Wednesday. But everything I saw afterwards is that how the oral argument went is making people believe that maybe this is not as dire as far as they don't necessarily have the numbers to totally upend everything.
Right, exactly. And you hit it right on the head, which is, of course, you need four justices to take a case on. And so that in itself, as we said already, is a little concerning that they're spending their time saying, let's pluck up this fringe theory. Let's hear this case at all. They have the choice. They do not have to hear everything. They don't hear everything. They could have done that, but they didn't. And so you've got four justices, and we know who they are, who probably indeed are in favor of doing this. And their names are Clarence Thomas and Joseph Alito and Neil Gorsuch and maybe Brett Kavanaugh also. Okay. So you've got four of them who are out there. And so that means, okay, you need another vote in some direction. We know at the far end, you also have Sonia Sotomayor and you've got Ketanji Brown Jackson. You've got Elena Kagan, who are almost certainly on the so-called liberal side. So three in the other direction. And it appears that also the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court, John Roberts, who normally is a conservative, was expressing some significant concerns about this. He wrote back in 2018, 2019, he said, you know, state courts do have roles to play at a time when the Supreme Court said that federal courts will not look at political gerrymandering. He said, yeah, but state courts can still handle that. So arguably, you've got four and four. You've got the three so-called liberals joined by the Chief Justice. And again, not with great particularity, can you ensure how people vote? But again, Kavanaugh and maybe expressing some concern, but he has normally signed on to this as well historically. And so you've got 4-4. And so the question is, who is that? Who's that fifth vote in one direction or another? And it struck me, and I think it struck many other people. Other people may have different assessments of what they're hearing, that her name is Amy Coney Barrett. It's Amy Coney Barrett, appointed by Donald Trump, along with at least two others. And she, along the way, was expressing great, great concern about this and suggesting once again, based upon her questions, that maybe this case shouldn't be here, and that in its extreme forms, and maybe even in its lesser forms, this is not something the Supreme Court should do. And that's what gives us some solace. That helps us sleep tonight, maybe in for the next 6 months or so.
Yes. Because, that is the thing. That is the thing. We hear, we dive into these, and then you're like, well, I guess we'll find out next summer.
Right, exactly.
Jim Santel will still be here. If you have questions for him, because obviously this is confusing and dense, but it is very important, 844-967-2789. We are going to take a break, and we'll be back in just a minute. This is As Goes Wisconsin.
She's the girl I'm going to marry. I'm in love with the queen of cannoli. When she takes them to a contest,
Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin with Kristen Bry. Our guest this half hour is Jim Santel, who is a criminal prosecutor and civil litigator with the United States Department of Justice, and also the host of Morning Cannolis. So if you want to hear more about what we're talking about today, I'm sure you're going to be talking about it on Saturday, tomorrow.
Join the nine people listen in on Saturday morning, and we always love to have your phone calls there as well. So great.
And so what we are talking about is kind of breaking down what happened on Wednesday for the oral arguments with Harper v. Moore, the case about the independent state legislature theory.
Right.
And from what I know, this is wildly unpopular.
It is wildly unpopular, not only among people of reason, of all parties, too. And I think that's your point earlier on, right? Republicans and Democrats, Green Party, independents, everybody out there should be very concerned about this. And again, the rational, if you will, the normal people who are looking at this are all across the board. Political people on all sides, conservative and liberal commentators, in the academic world as well, the legal world. So many articles out there. Just type in the theory and you will see all kinds of things being written about this historically. 95% of them, maybe 90% of them say, no, this
please
can't
don't
be
do this.
Fun to talk about, fun to engage in, maybe some discussion, but this should not be something that we seriously embrace. And more importantly, it came up the oral argument. Also, Neil Katyal, who was representing one of the three lawyers there, also talked about the history and said, this is not looking to history what our founding fathers intended by that. And frankly, even this notion that it's just the legislature. They were commenting about the legislature in a more broad sense, the people who make the laws, and that includes a governor usually, right, and other people involved in that. And so this notion that somehow it's this very discreet body, that wasn't what they were thinking at all, and they would be horrified. The people who created Article 3 in the Constitution, all about judges, they would be horrified to think that somehow courts should not be involved in deciding these kinds of things. That, too, as what they wrote in the Federalist Papers, other things along the way, there's no historical predicate for this. And, again, everybody who has really looked at this with some sense of balance, maybe, and that's a critical thing about at least four members of our Supreme Court, has rejected it and said, no, it can't be right.
So, Jim, whose wish list is this on? Is this
right?
Because I keep thinking of Leonard Leo, who's the Federalist Society, but his whole thing is appointing judges that are handpicked by the Federalist Society, and doing this kind of knocks out his toys.
Right, it certainly does. And that's why it's also very interesting, right, for that very reason. To the extent that you feel that you want to go to the courts and fill the courts with people who are of your same mind, eliminating them from this process seems to be counterintuitive. And so where it comes from, Jane, is just this. You've talked on this program and other settings, frankly, about those folks who were advocating for the overthrow of the 2020 election, right? And those folks who put together memorandums, for example, that described how if we go to state legislatures, we will have an opportunity there for them. Petition them. Let's go back to Georgia. Tell the Georgia legislature that it needs to rethink the electoral votes coming out of the state of Georgia. That kind of a fellow named John Eastman, whose name I know you know well, authored this memorandum that had this multi-purpose focus to it. That was one of them. Let's go to the legislatures and have them redo what the popular vote would otherwise indicate and send them then to Mike Pence on January 6th. So this is where it really comes from. It's an offshoot of that. It plainly has other aspects to it. It has been out there and it's been percolating up a little bit, but really seized upon by many people. I will tell you as well that Ginny Thomas, the spouse of one of those people who's going to decide this case, Clarence Thomas, was also advocating for it. And she was one of those people who said, Jane and Kristen, that this is something the Supreme Court should not only think about, but should give very, very serious thought to and embrace as a way of returning, as they say, the responsibility for this back to the people's houses, which are the legislatures. That, once again, Ms. Thomas, with due respect, is just ridiculous and not founded on any normal legal theory, not history otherwise. But it comes out of the same thing that still animates us, which is the 2020 challenge and that election. We're back there once again.
Ginny Thomas is not a lawyer, right?
She is not. I don't believe.
Activist,
I think that's
she
right.
She randomly go to law school, right, so she's really just come out of We should do this because right. of all the experience I have
exactly.
of knowing about
right.
the law.
Right, right. And again, I will tell you candidly, I often tell people you don't have to go to law school to understand these things at all, but you do have to have some sense of reason and rationality. Yeah. And I think Ms. Thomas and others out there, including people who are advocating on behalf of the North Carolina legislature, have got this all wrong. And again, a lot of the commentary for Wednesday was just that. People talk about them being embarrassed by questions from both the left and the right. Again, Amy Coney Barrett and John Roberts, likewise, indicating that this is not something that is normal. Mm-hmm. And even though it's out there, this needs to be put to bed. And we hope that come June, as we've said, that this does get put to bed completely. One of the other concerns, Kristen and Jane, still out there is, you know, there are variations on this, too. You could go whole hog. You could do yeah. something less than that. And the concern is still, even with Amy Coney Barrett being very skeptical about this, what if John Roberts, who tries to be the conciliator, right, on all these things, even in the Dobbs case, he was trying to find this middle ground, which there plainly was not in the end. He maybe trying to look for some way of saying, okay, we can adopt some portion of this. Maybe courts have some role, but not complete. Maybe the federal courts should be involved in this in some way. And that, too, is going to be problematic because one of the other concerns about this is you could very well get different rules, get this for federal elections and state elections. And, you know, in Wisconsin here, as in other states, we always vote. You vote for school board. You vote mm-hmm. for a county board of supervisors. You vote for your state senators and your federal representatives all on one ballot. Could you imagine if we had different kinds of rules and regulations for those, the mess that this would cause? The League of Women Voters wrote this wonderful brief, this amicus brief, saying just that, putting aside the crazy, which is a word that they would not use, I would. They said, what do you do with all these different votes then that comes in, all these different processes? That's also a part of this. And again, if John Roberts, bless him for trying to find some middle ground. Hopefully what he does is he solidifies his view. He brings Amy Coney Barrett, maybe Brett Kavanaugh, and we get somewhere at least a 5-4 decision shutting this down completely. I'm hopeful still that will happen, and there won't be some sort of middle gray area where they say, yeah, we're just going to change this a bit, because the other concern is that then it opens the door to the next case, right?
Yep.
This is about federal elections. What about state elections then? If it's got makes some sense there and opens up all kinds of other possibilities, as we all know, when Supreme Courts say things, people seize on the language and they say, well, it was good here, and maybe it should be good over here. And that's the concern down the road as well.
All right. Well, this flew by, so we're going to have you back because we didn't get to talk about the other hearings that are happening because there's a full docket.
It is a full docket.
Somewhat scary, terrifying cases that the Supreme Court is hearing, so we'll have to have you back to explain it to us.
I would be delighted to. Anytime,
Jim Santel,
Kristen.
Thank you so much for being here.
I'm thrilled to be here, and we'll talk with you again and your listeners and Jane very, very soon.
Absolutely. You can hear him tomorrow at 9 a.m. right here on the Civic Media Network for Morning Cannolis. He is Jim Santel. This is As Goes Wisconsin, and we'll be right back.
He's probably cooler than me. Sleeps right where I used to sleep, right by your door.